This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
I think when you're advising players, particularly with bridge type contracts where you're certainly looking to a long-term contract, and certainly for Alex, his goals were winning. And frankly, he had a 1200 OPS in Fenway, and he certainly hits well on the road too, but that certainly was one of the ballparks where he sees it well and plays well. So for that type of contract, it was certainly a major consideration in his choices of going to a franchise that had, you know, some franchise talent on it, veteran players, and also a good young crop of players. So, but his performance level there is certainly an important part of his consideration.
Scott Boras. Okay, that's a name we hear all the time. He's had some big, high-profile wins. He's had some losses. His role in baseball, he's gone from sort of the boogeyman who represents all these greedy, selfish players to some people better understanding. No, he's an agent who has clients, and he represents them in their best interests. And it's sort of been the subject, because he represents so many high-profile players, the Cubs are often in his orbit and vice versa.
I'm looking at this, and I understand that Scott Boras has a job to do, and he does a very good job at it. And people would kind of doubt him every once in a while because they're like, well, you know, the things have changed, you know. And I realize now that it's going to take an extraordinary effort to get the guys that you want, because guess what? If you have, it's like when you were younger. Well, I think when all of us were younger and you were interested in someone, right? This idea that you were interested in them in a vacuum is so ridiculous, because do you have bad taste? And if you have bad taste, fine. Yes, you're going to get what you want, and it's not going to really take much effort, right? But if you have good taste, I profess to have good taste, it's going to take a certain amount of effort to get what you want. The Cubs keep operating as if they're in a vacuum. Tom Ricketts says, yes, you can pay him this money that we weren't going to allow you to pay him, and that'll be good enough because, well, we're going above and beyond what we wanted to do in a vacuum. There are other people who want these players.
It might not be the market rate.
It's not the market rate. You know how I know? Because he signed a deal that was much more valuable, that had more opt-outs, and the deferred money helps. And these are all things that you were not willing to do. You know the expression that a lot of young ladies tell me when they are struggling with deciding whether or not to continue going forward with a man is, well, if he wanted to, he would. And it's true. And if the Cubs wanted to, they would. They didn't. So they didn't want to.
That's sort of what we were saying regarding the 1 year all in with Vlad Guerrero. They're not going to pay him thereafter, just like they're not going to pay
might,
Kyle
they
Tucker.
They might, because think, because you all, it's never too late to evolve. No. Dan, you sat here in this very studio before the season began, the NFL season began, and you told me one thing for certain. Well, they're definitely not going to get rid of Matt Eberflus before the season's in because they just don't do that.
I wanted them to.
Did they evolve?
They wanted to, and they did.
Exactly. It's that simple. And anybody who's in an ownership level of a team that's top five in revenue, like the Cubs, and wants to convince you otherwise, is blowing smoke.
Here's what Ken Rosenthal said on the Fair Territory podcast regarding the Cubs' efforts or lack thereof to sign Alex Bregman.
Today, I want to build on a note that I had in my Sunday notes column, the one about the Cubs and how they whiffed on Alex Bregman. And I started the note by saying, or recalling, what Theo Epstein said when the Cubs traded for Aroldis Chapman during the 2016 season. Theo, who was trying to break a 108-year World Series title drought, said, if not now, when? Now, as I mentioned, the situation for the Cubs now is not as urgent as it was then, but Alex Bregman for them presented an opportunity, a pretty rare opportunity, at a moment in time when they should have been ready to strike. Now, why is Bregman or why was Bregman such a rare opportunity? A couple of reasons. This is perhaps the only year the Cubs will have Kyle Tucker. At this point, you probably can say it is going to be the only year the Cubs are going to have Kyle Tucker because of the way that they've resisted spending long-term for the most part in recent years. So you've got 1 year of Kyle Tucker, at least one certain year of club control. You've had years in which you were financially disciplined, cutting the payroll, trying to put yourself in a position where when an opportunity like Bregman arose, you'd be ready to go. Well, what did the Cubs do? They made the fourth highest offer behind the Tigers, behind the Astros, behind the Red Sox. I'm talking about total guaranteed money. And obviously, they didn't get the player. So I was critical of them in this particular note, and I said, if not now, when? That's the question Theo asked. And Tom Ricketts, as owner, his answer lately seems to be never. And when you're charging the highest ticket prices in the game, or among the highest ticket prices, I should say, that's a problem. And that's a lack of commitment that, frankly, deserves to be called out.
When okay. you hear that and you pair it with what he said in The Athletic.
Agreed.
That's pretty strong.
Strong in that the Cubs are being weak when how they're coming at players.
Now, prior to the reports about Justin Turner, Rosenthal said the Cubs' current estimated luxury tax payroll ranks 14th. That was according to Baseball Prospectus. But his point is, Theo Epstein told you, if not now, then when? And you've defined your window. It's 1 year. It's Justin Turner's, or it's Kyle Tucker's availability.
It's funny. He said, if not now, then when? And the new regime says, we did it already. Look what we did.
But you've defined your window. It's 1 year. It's Tucker.
I would argue it's 2
Period
years.
Period paragraph.
I understand why you're saying it's 1 year because Kyle Tucker is only under contract for 1 year. But I would argue it's 2 years just because I think the work stoppage looms large in how they're looking at this period
Hell
of time.
Yeah, it does.
So I think it's a 2 year window. Now with Kyle Tucker, you could start doing some calculations on who else will be available and not get, you know, extended, re-signed, whatever, and maybe there's another situation. Don't know that it'd be on Kyle Tucker's level, however, next year. That's why I'm adamant about the Vlad Guerrero Jr. piece. If you have a chance to add to this group this year, you do it because you've got Kyle Tucker. I mean, Ken Rosenthal was very cut and dry about it. I think Jed Hoyer is very cut and dry about it. But unfortunately, you know, one thing that Ken pointed out is there isn't as much urgency as there was for, you know, Theo back then. There's urgency for Jed Hoyer. I guarantee you that.
But it's not urgency that perhaps he has the financial wherewithal to act on.
I don't know if it's wherewithal. It sounds like it's allowance.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's like your parents give you an allowance and you're like,
hey, you better make the playoffs. Well, okay, let me go get players. No.
You know what it's equivalent to? It's equivalent to your parents telling you, well, you know what? I'm tired of driving you around. You need to buy a car. It's like, okay, you're going to help with that? yeah, I'll give you this much money, knowing it's not enough money to get a car. You can get a bike, be biking around town, maybe.
Yeah, or we'll give you this much money to go to college, and you know that's going to cost you like a half a semester. The quote that I think is telling is the one that Rosenthal illustrated in this part of the story, and it's from Hoyer saying, "I realize this is a financial stretch above our budget," referring to the Bregman offer, "but I realize that this is the moment to do it." So he knew, he's acknowledging what the restrictions are, but yeah, he's still going to try to the best of the ability. I'm not making excuses for anybody here. I'm just pointing out what seems to be the obvious path.
I think it's important that we hear Ricketts in his own words also talking about how they spend.
Baseball, the business model in baseball, it's worked pretty well for a long time, but there's a few things right now that just are a little out of kilter. Obviously, the Dodgers have a lot more resources naturally from smart business moves they made years ago, and so I don't begrudge them any of that. You know, some teams just have outside resources that are funding their player moves and acquisitions, and that's really hard to compete with. And I understand when fans say, "How come you don't spend like that?" Because they think somehow we have all these dollars that the Dodgers have, or the Mets have, or the Yankees have, and we just keep it, which isn't true at all. Like, what happens is we try to break even every year, and that's about it. And so, so I think that there's one problem that I think there's a competitive balance issue that gets created. But the other problem is, I don't think fans should spend all their time thinking about which team has more money or how much they're spending. We should talk about players and who we draft and who we're developing, and I just think it becomes a big narrative that's a distraction. So I think the model could get better. And then secondly, I think the other part of this is, and a little bit frustrating at times, is, you know, we've invested more in the team and the ballpark and the neighborhood than any other owner out of their pocket in baseball. Like, we came out privately financing all the renovations at Wrigley, everything we do around Wrigley Field, you know, roughly $1 billion. And no one has that kind of financial commitment to their team. And so so when I have a fan come up and say, "Hey, you're cheap," or open your wallet or something like that, I just think they're just misinformed. And it's just the wrong way to look at our ownership.
No.
The way he set that up, it's as if he doesn't think we are capable of understanding how, one, real estate works.
Yeah, one, we're allowed to focus on, as fans, whatever we want. Don't tell us what to focus on. We're not focusing on drafting and player development.
Distraction.
Investing in the city is an investment that will give back to you tenfold. It already has.
Nobody's bought up all the land.
Nobody's criticizing your investment in the city and the neighborhood in Wrigley.
All it's doing is accruing value.
Right. All they're doing is making money hand over fist on those investments.
I support it. We go to Rally House all the time. You know how we feel about that place. Like, I went to the DraftKings Sportsbook.
They own all of it. And when you say we're only breaking even, that is a very, very, very specific silo of baseball only money.
So that's what's hilarious about it is he wants the investment piece of it to talk about all the other things, including baseball, but he wants the results to just be focused on the baseball in terms of, well, we do put in the money for the baseball and the other, but you're making money doing all this other stuff. You got to include that in the umbrella you're talking about as well.
That's not a distraction. That's where fans know, hey, you're making money hand over fist on all of this land and all of the increase in value, not to mention the cash that's being thrown off by concerts and rooftops and Gallagher Way. But that's not baseball money. That's not part of what you're putting back in.
Part of the issue here is, number one, they used to be that team. Like, the reason fans have this expectation is because of what they did to win a World Series. They did spend the money on the biggest name free agent available at the time, and it won them a World Series. Period. That's the result of what happened after they signed Jason Hayward. You can talk all day until the cows come home about what happened after that. It was unfortunate. There were bad decisions that were made via trades and free agents because of it. Expensive ones. Trying to keep that thing afloat. We know what happened. The game changed. The batters changed. The profile of the batters changed. We know all of this. They did also draft well at that time. Well enough to see their first overall picks, their first round picks, come to fruition on the big league level. Wilson Contreras, I'll never forget when they announced that he was going to be there. But there were decisions that were made down the line that showed that they had a steep difference in how they were going to change the format of how they were operating on this team. Yu Darvish trade, will mention it every day. Letting Kyle Schwarber walk. They changed the standard. They did. So that's why fans ask the question, is because you set the standard for them and you gave them the result that they wanted.
And now they want that same result.
So that's why people ask the question. I appreciate him being present and giving his side of the story, because a lot of owners don't even do that. And I appreciate him investing in the city, because a lot of people don't do that.
But the key word is investing. He's making money on that.
But yeah, but let's separate why that disconnect is there. It's there because you gave people a World Series.
So you're saying he set the bar too high for his own purposes?
Because no, it's just, this is, you set the expectation and then people hold you to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's going to be very interesting to follow this season, mainly because there is a playoff expectation on this team with the moves that they have made. And Dan's, we already did it. Like, I get what they've gone out and
done. That's kind of, hey, by the way, you know, we won the World Series a while back.
Yeah, a while back, being you never stop trying to win the World Series.
And the next thing you know, it's 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. In a blink. For some people, that World Series feels like yesterday. It's 9 years ago.
And if you're in the NFL, the next thing you know, it's 30 years.
Think about where you were 9 years ago. Like, that is a long-ass time ago.
Well, for me as a White Sox fan, I can literally say 20 years ago. Like,
right, but there's no expectations there.
But that's the point, though, is how long does that last you?
Go White Sox.
clearly there is a disconnect between Cubs ownership and the common Cubs fan. And what's kind of humorous about it is that there's always a disconnect between an ownership and its fans, unless you're in certain places and you're winning. I can name probably on one hand all the teams I feel like there is no disconnect between the ownership and the fans.
But I love that the standard has been set for this. You want this to be the discussion.
Yeah.
You want that to be the standard. You want your fans to ask you those questions because they think they are the Joneses, so to speak. And they should. That's the goal, is to set that standard.
Well, here's what we know about Cubs ownership. They are not the Joneses. They are the other family trying to keep up, and they're not doing
no, but they're
well.
Not.
They're
no,
not
I
doing
mean,
very
the,
well.
The New Joneses are the Dodgers.
They just told
and the
you.
Mets.
Yeah, they just told you they can't keep up because the Dodgers have made really good business decisions years ago.
But he is right about you do need to look at the drafting piece of this. You do need to look at your prospects.
Yeah. Stack the prospects so you can trade for guys and go for it every
part
once
of the
in a while.
Reason they're
like
in this,
right now.
Part of the reason they're in this problem and the reason it wasn't sustainable is because of how they struggled developing certain talent on their roster. You know, they did have that history of not being able to develop pitching talent for a long time. You know, that is part of the issue here. That is how you become sustainable.
And to be honest, they didn't want to develop pitching talent for a while. That just wasn't the belief in the league before the game changed completely.
They thought they could just hit their way out of everything.
I mean, I don't know. Some of that was pretty timeless. Like, Cleveland was pretty timeless. Detroit's history of development. That's how you kept in the conversation.
But Theo was very open about when the John Lester contract was signed. They, especially due to injury, they did not want to invest in young arms. They wanted to go buy pitching. And they did when the time came, and then the game changed. And then it became simply about velocity and spin and pitch creation and the number of healthy elbows you can have before they all blow out. And everybody's throwing 100, and you just get as many of those guys as you can, which was the complete opposite of the way they had done business in Boston and here with the Cubs.
But I do agree with him in that you have to have a sustainable farm system to be able to compete and, frankly, sustain that success. You do. See the Astros.
To not have the dip.
Seven straight ALCSs, and you have the tradable prospects, and you're able to get that capital. If it's not monetary, it's prospects. Like, that's how you stay afloat, right? That's how you keep it going. He's right about that part. Like, that should be acknowledged, but you set the standard.
Now live up to it.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris. The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
But you're going to sign 17 tight ends. I hope you're ready. You're going to draft all of them. You're going to sign all of them. He's great at personnel and attacking. And look, Kmet to me can be a Laporta-like tight end. Kmet has a lot of tools, and you just haven't had things in place to fully unlock all of it. But I wouldn't be shocked in the least if you go after a tight end, whether it be free agency or draft. No, you're absolutely making that conversion.
Yeah, they need another one regardless of who their head coach is, because the Gerald Everett thing was a flop.
You don't like Gerald?
He's bad. You liked him? What did you see you liked?
No, I was just curious of your thoughts.
That was awful.
I'm indifferent on tight ends. I forgot about the tight ends as a position because, you know, they weren't really used.
Yeah, and I disagree with Mike Valenti, who was on with Spiegel and Grote. I disagree that Kmet is like Laporta. I think Laporta is much more of a U tight end than he is an inline blocker. I think that when I see Kmet, I see just a classic Y tight end, old-fashioned in line, but, you know, pass catching ability, but not necessarily your idealized move guy. So I do think they need that. But the question I have is, are we considering what Ben Johnson's going to do correctly? And we may not be.
I think if you go back to his introductory press conference and what he said about building the offense around Caleb Williams. Obviously, he's familiar with Caleb Williams' game. He understands, but he's going to get even more familiar. And, you know, you can throw the playbook away. He said he was going to tear the offense down to the studs.
Right.
And we know he's going to build it up around Caleb Williams, but Caleb Williams is a very different quarterback with a different skill set than Jared Goff. So I'm not really getting ahead of myself in looking at what Detroit was doing last year as this blueprint, because he told us, I'm tearing it down to the studs. I mean, I don't know what you took from that specific remark, that comment, but what I took from that is what you see next year could look completely different from what I've been doing in Detroit.
That's why I asked Mike Florio the question that I did about system and about fit and pro personnel scouting and all that stuff, where it used to be easy to say, well, it's this guy and this guy does this. And they go, Mike Martz does this, or Dick LeBeau does this.
And you knew as an organization, as a head coach hiring an offensive coordinator or as a head coach hiring a defensive coordinator, what you were getting based on the track record. Whereas with the Bears, they hire Ben Johnson because he is on the cutting edge of innovation, and therefore you hire him and you say, hey, go innovate.
What's next?
Yes.
Coach. You're not just hiring a guy to do the same thing. You're hiring a guy who is really good at the job. And that, I think, is in large part the mistake of the Belichick tree, where nothing ever really translated. With Bill Belichick's brilliance doesn't come with people pretending to be Bill Belichick and harumphing and around and treating people like crap.
You still have to innovate.
That's the key. You got to coach. So as much fun as it is, and really it's all we have to say, what has Ben Johnson done? What has he run? I think what Ben Johnson's telling us is, look, let me see what I got here.
Now, we can ignore him. Like, we ignore a lot of people when they talk.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially in that position.
And it doesn't stop us from doing what we want to do regardless.
Exactly.
But I think it might be in the better service of you, the Bears fan, to start to allow him to prove that he's going to do something different.
Yeah, I think my default setting is I can't wait to see what he does. I'm not looking at what happened last year or the year before that or the year before that in Detroit as that's what the Bears offense is going to look like.
We can't help it, though. We always were like, well, wait a second. They took Jahmyr Gibbs. It was before anybody thought as a running back, and maybe they'll do the same thing because that's what they did. And I don't necessarily think that's predictive at all, but we don't have anything else. He's never been a head coach before.
Yeah, we don't have anything else. But he has called plays before. Mm-hmm. So we can go back to his play calling and saying he likes to do things differently. He clearly had a quarterback in Jared Goff who had a specific skill set, and Caleb Williams, who still, like, Jared Goff is maxed out. The book is out on Jared Goff. Caleb Williams, there is a book that is being written about him, but it's very early and things can change and get way better.
This guy's being brought in to write it.
Yes. And that's kind of the point.
Release edited.
We know what type of writer he is, but we're about to see how many different genres he can do.
Yeah, I would say Caleb should get agency for writing it. I'll let him be the editor. I'll let him be the in this role as, let's do more of this.
I saw
less
more
of this.
Him being the main character in a book that's being written.
I don't think that's fair to Caleb. I think that strips him of his professional agency. But it's not unreasonable.
I got you. It's a guy who's the director now, who's also the director and the producer of the movie, and Caleb. He's got executive producer credit when the credits roll, not just the lead actor.
Here's more from Mike Valenti with Spiegel and Grody yesterday on the Spiegel and Holmes show in that regard about his curiosity about the Johnson and Williams relationship.
I am fascinated because, look, he got Jared Goff to play his way. But how much of that was that Jared Goff is good, but he's limited. He's typecast. He is a certain type of guy. I am going to be fascinated to see what Ben Johnson's vision for Caleb will be. We know it'll come off the run game. We know it's going to be a ton of pre-snap candy, tons of play action. But Caleb unlocks things that, frankly, Ben Johnson couldn't do here. You know, we always have a joke. We call it mobile Goff season. Anytime he would rush for, you know, 4 or 5 yards, you're like, look at the wheels on this cat. But with Caleb, that's a different deal. So you're going to get absolute command position from the head coach. He is not a mild-mannered guy. Lose whatever you think about that. He will cuss guys out. He is going to demand accountability. He is going to spread the football around. He is going to make the quarterback's job easier, but it will begin and end with the run game. So when you talk your roster construction, it is going to be completely, obviously, I don't need to tell you, Speaks, completely remade up front because that offensive line stinks.
I mean, I share the curiosity, right? I think for me, listening to what he's describing there, it's hard to look at the Bears right now and not say that the most important relationship isn't the one between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. And that's really what you could build a great defense, get the guys you want on the offensive line, but if that thing doesn't ring true with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, where are we going to be left?
But I like the fact that when he just sort of a throwaway line where you're going to get a lot of the pre-snap candy and all the play action stuff. Now, like, oh, great.
Does that mean he's going to be good at it, Caleb?
Finally. Exactly. That if we know cadence was an issue,
yes.
Everything starts with the drum beat.
Yeah, and so knowing that everything starts with that, that's why I'm so concerned. Is if you had to say, what are the top three things you want Caleb Williams to be better at this year than he was last year? Cadence would be number one, because that sets the tone for everything. And then just being able to hit a guy down the field.
But that's the drumbeat of every play, is using that cadence to help you see what you need to see, to give you an opportunity to
survey the field
and manipulate the way they're leaning through how you're barking out the signals. There's so much nuance to that. And if he can get that down and that the rhythm of the play, get everything started correct, because otherwise all the other candy and play action gets discombobulated.
Yeah. I think when I watch him last year, it's kind of like, not burn the tape. I'm not saying, you know, delete the video of what he did, but I can't wait for just to kick the reset button and to see what this looks like and how different it's going to look, because I want it to look very different.
And I'm taking this all, when we were talking yesterday during the complimentary football bit, was it you that brought up
the one you ran, where you ran out of compliments?
I tried. I just ran out. It happens. But when you brought up what Rick Smith said about how the Bears are just doing everything differently and unlike the Bears, at least in that regard, when it came to the pursuit of Ben Johnson, if it's still going that way and you've told this guy, look, this is your show and we don't have to cleave to anything that we've thought in the past about these players, and whether or not Ryan Poles is going to swallow his pride and say, I know I drafted this guy because I had envisioned him to be this, or Matt Eberflus thought he was this, and Johnson has to be able to say, yeah, no. He can't run that. He can't do this. And we're either going to move on from him or he's going to play a different position, that kind of thing.
I agree with the Rick Smith piece that Layla brought that up.
Layla did. Okay.
Okay, so I agree with that. And you're... The way all of our heads were like, oh, when he explained to us how different things are from what he, as a lifelong Chicagoan, had recognized the Bears' operations in the past, that was very hopeful, if you will. Mm-hmm. I hope there's no reverting back to the old ways now that you've got your guy in the building. You're paying him all that money for a reason. That should symbolize how much power he has in the building.
And sometimes the reversion to old ways comes from anything that makes you uncomfortable. And you get out of your
comfort
zone.
What did he tell us in his press conference? Get comfortable being uncomfortable. That wasn't a message just for the players who were sitting up front. That was for everyone within earshot. And you know who was within earshot? Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles,
George
McCaskey. That was the most important, but DJ Moore talked about it on these airwaves.
I do have a message here for the players. Get comfortable being uncomfortable. The bar has been set higher than it's ever been set before.
Good, and I want him to be uncomfortable too. Like Ben Johnson, I don't mind if he says, hey, I don't know if this is going to work, but let's try it. Let's see. I don't know, but I want to find out. I like, go to the lab. Be a mad scientist every once in a while. And say, hey, look, let's can't hurt to try. It's an exhibition game. You know, it's the family night practice. Let's give it a shot. Let's see what we can do with some of this.
Family night practice.
You know, let's try it. This is a really exciting time in that regard. But we're going to chase all of these rabbits looking for, oh, this is a Ben Johnson thing. He wants to do this. That maybe in a perfect world, he doesn't even know yet. That Ben Johnson's going to trust, like...
he has ideas. I want him to have ideas.
He has principles. He has some foundation. I'm not saying he doesn't have any foundational beliefs. But when it comes to his first team on the field, you can think about everything. You can look at every stat printout you want. You can get every metric you want. But until you talk to that player and see that player and say, oh, okay, he wants to do this. He's much better delivering that block at that angle than this block at this angle. That's what you're paying him for. That's coaching.
And they're paying him handsomely.
Okay, they're going to, if they get their money's worth out of this, things are going real well.
Well, if they get their money's worth out of this, they'll be a preeminent football team for the next decade.
Especially those ticket prices, man. That is bold.
Is it bold?
Yeah. Well, you raise it because you know you can get it.
Exactly.
Nobody's going anywhere.
They could have raised those ticket prices.
Ticket prices are 5 and 12. What are they? You're paying it. Shut up. And if you don't pay it, somebody else will.
And I think that's the most important part. If you don't pay it, somebody else will. That is the reality of the situation. It hurts, but guess what? You're in or you're out.
And I always say that.
It's like, a luxury. Going to a football game is a luxury.
And somebody said, well, why do I have... You don't have to.
You don't.
No one's forcing you to pay it.
This is not food, shelter, clothing. This is a Bears game.
Right. No. You're not complaining over the price of a Louis Vuitton bag because you're not buying one. You're not in the market for one.
Facts.
Right?
Facts.
So it's like, oh my God, Louis Vuitton just raised their prices 10%? Tiffany just raised their prices 10%? Yes. So what's your point?
That's why I stay down here on the regular people level, doing regular people things.
Yeah.
I know I can't afford it.
When Old Navy sends you that 40% off coupon?
Oh, not the Old Navy.
Yeah.
Old Navy's got some quality stuff.
Yeah, they do. It doesn't last. I mean, you wash it once and it's gone. But
Kohl's. Oh, never pay full price at Kohl's. There's always a coupon.
True.
There's always a coupon for everything.
Not everything.
You'd be surprised. Yeah. There's all kinds of codes that work.
Okay, that's fair. The codes.
Yeah.
How come I didn't know about these codes?
Yeah, but there's printable
coupons. Just got to know somebody.
I'm telling you. CVS. That's the hack.
We know. That's where you get your underwear and everything else. I got you.
All of it. When we took my kid to college and we made the mistake when we went to Bucknell, everybody went to Walmart. And I'm like, no. Let everybody else go to Target and Walmart. We're going to go to CVS, has everything we want, and I've got a 35% off total purchase coupon for all full everything. We save hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars getting all of the pens and pencils and school supplies and all of that, bottled water and everything they say you have to have.
Okay.
Telling you.
In 28 minutes, impressive. Six Pistons in double figures, led by Cunningham with 29. Kobe White had just 7 points tonight on a tough shooting night. Bouzelis, 8 straight games with 10 plus points. Dosunmu led the way with 23. Vucevic, 22 and 13 rebounds. Giddey had 16. Jones with 15 off the bench. Jalen Smith at 11. Off for a week. Bulls will get a breather. The mini fridge.
Everybody got a breather. Everybody needed a breather, frankly. Everybody's getting sick. There's everything going around. You know, you can rest up a little bit, get your strength back. And now we're back at it tonight. Adam Amin will be on the call with Stacey King of the Bulls and the Knicks. Adam is on Twitter, @AdamAmin, and he joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. How's New York?
New York is a delight today. It's sunny and bright, and there's at least a little bit of warmth, and I'm hoping it's the same for you guys back home right now.
It is. It's so sunny outside. Hold the warmth.
Yeah, it's not warm. What's your go-to pizza slice?
You know what it is? It's the dollar slice. I don't have like a go-to here.
Okay.
I am very excited that Prince Street is now available in Chicago. So I do love Prince Street pizza, but here I go for the dollar slice, man, the $1.50. I'm doing that before we go to Madison Square Garden today. That's a buddy of mine's coming down from Jersey, or I guess it's coming up from Jersey. We're going to go grab a dollar slice, catch up, and then we go call a game.
All right, if you get the chance, there's a $3 slice called Norm's.
That sounds expensive.
But it's worth it. Norm's is spectacular. If you ever want to splurge, that's the joint.
The $3 splurge pizza slice. I love that.
Yep, it is. You know, it's bougie, but it's worth it. what are the Bulls as of right now? Do they know yet? And especially with this Patrick Williams' latest injury news and the whole thing with Adama Sanogo being hurt now, are they? Do you get the sense that there's going to be a much more full-blown commitment to development?
Well, they're not bougie, unlike the people.
That's facts.
They're the opposite. They're the opposite of bougie. And I do think that the Williams injury probably opens the door for more minutes for some of the younger guys, in particular Modest Bouzelis, which is the focus here. I do think they have a better idea of what they are. I understand where the split is, and because I was kind of sitting in that confusion for a while, as you know, at least initially after the trade deadline, like I think a lot of people were, right? I think a lot of people kind of heard what they felt were mixed messages. I thought it was kind of a mixed message to say, well, we're going to lose, but we're also going to try to win. Basically saying, like, we're going to get the young players going, which in NBA parlance essentially means we're going to lose games. But when you say we're going to try for the play-in tournament, then that means you're going to try to win games, essentially. So that sounds, I think, on its surface level as a mixed message, and I believe that is. I do think that when you dig a little deeper, I know Casey Johnson has done a lot of work on this side. I know that a lot of the beat writers have talked to the front office on background and have gotten a better sense for this, and you see that kind of slip through in some of the articles. I understand writers' jobs. They don't want to give away too much, but they do want to, you know, let you know that they're in the trenches. I do feel that there is a little bit more clarity, and it's a disappointing clarity, right? Because mm-hmm. Bulls fans are tired. They're exhausted by some of this, you know, mid-level running that they've seen the last two-plus seasons now, going into basically year three of that, and being right around the 10 spot, 9 spot, fighting for the play-in spot, whatever. I don't think this team is fighting for a play-in spot. I think they are going to make a devoted run with Modest Bouzelis. I think they want to see what Terry and Phillips have to offer as role players. I think they want to see if Josh Giddey is worthy of re-signing. I think they want to see what they have with some of the younger players. I don't know if you're going to do what like the Thunder did a few years ago and bench Al Horford for 25 games. I don't think that's going to be the case, where you look at Vucevic and say, hey, you're done for the rest of the year and we'll trade you in the offseason. I don't think you raise value that way. I don't think that's good for anybody in that scenario. I understand the frustration essentially being, hey, we've got to wait another 3 months before anything happens, or 4 months before anything happens. You basically have to wait until July 1st or the draft around there, basically late June, to see any type of movement on this roster. And I think fans are so tired at times of what they've seen the last couple of years, and they want to change. They don't like the status quo, and that's understandable. They want to see a change. That change, I think, is on its way. I just don't think it's, you know, I think they were going to hope that it was going to happen around the trade deadline. It didn't. So I think that portion of where this team is at, where the organization at, is pushed down the road a few months. But I do think that this is going to be a more developmental run, while still trying to instill like culture. And I know that's a buzzword. I know people are tired of a lot of these things. I get where all the frustration is coming from. I'm telling you, this is what I think is going to take place over the next 2 months, basically.
Adam, I think a lot of us, we were just so waiting for that trade deadline to pass to see what you just described when you talk about Julian Phillips and Dalen Terry and some of these other guys. Like, we need to know whether or not they can play and if they are going to be guys who would even be here when the Bulls are relevant again and from a win-loss standpoint. And it feels like next year is going to be very much a rebuilding, don't expect too much from jump. And maybe I'm wrong in the way I'm looking at it, but the way you kind of just set things up to say it's delayed to the offseason, I can't really foresee them going out and get some difference makers who are going to make the Bulls a playoff team in what is currently the Eastern Conference right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'm also like, I hear you say that, and I know that's what I feel too, Marshall. I think that's exactly how I feel too, what I think is going to take place. And it sucks. It sucks to hear, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
It's not fun to be in this position. And this is what, you know, is tough about watching an organization on a day-to-day basis. You guys also have the luxury, not you and Dan necessarily, but I think fans have the luxury of being able to turn this off. And they can say, I'll see you in a year and a half. I don't. You guys don't necessarily have that luxury either. I have to track the progress, no matter how painful it might be at times. I do think this is going to be an important year coming up in the 25-26 season, the summer coming up, and then leading into the following season, the 25-26 campaign. It is going to be a lot of growing pains. It is going to be a lot of mistakes. It is going to be a lot of figuring out what and who are worthy of keeping around. And this is what a rebuild does kind of look like. Now, I know nobody wants to use that word. Fine. You guys play the semantics. Not you again. Just the royal you. You guys play the semantics. I feel like I'm attacking. As soon as Marshall came on, I'm just attacking.
No. Let your thoughts flow freely. Do not worry about offending anyone who's listening. Definitely not me or Dan. We don't care. Know. Yeah, just go.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, they don't want to say rebuild. That's fine. That's okay. It has all the symptoms of a rebuild. It may not be a rebuild. It certainly feels and smells and sounds like one, and that's okay, because that's what it takes now at this point. I think this is the route that they're going to have to go. I also feel like there are some comments that I needed clarification on. I talked to some people around the organization over the last week, just making some calls and getting some texts and just asking, like, hey, what does this mean to you? I didn't know what, you know, Karnišovas and exactly what he was pointing to when he said, you know, I think we're looking for 9 to 10 great players versus 2 to 3 superstars. And it took me a while to kind of figure out exactly what that meant. It's like, well, look at the last 20 years of the NBA, and it takes superstars, doesn't it?
Yep.
And I understand that that's still probably the case. You're still going to need somebody, maybe not next year, but the following year. You know, if you're looking at 26, 27 being the year where you want to be back into the mix fully competitive, you're going to need some semblance of a star. You're going to need a superstar. You're going to need a high-level, high-quality, highly paid role player, something like that. You're going to need those things. But I am starting to understand, based off of where the CBA is going to be, what the second apron has done to teams that are trying to make moves, what the landscape is with superstar players, and I think Jimmy Butler is probably the most recent and most glaring example of it, that when you have somebody that good or considered to be that good that has kind of a stronghold over your organization, how much that hamstrings your ability to get things done. I see where that those comments are starting to come in from and why those comments are being made. Now, will it work? I don't know. That's the thing I wish I knew, but I understand a little bit better, having talked to a few people around the organization, I understand a little bit better what I think Karnišovas was trying to say, or at least maybe what the perception he was hoping to give across was to be. So it's a lot of flux, but I'm at least getting a plan, a semblance of a plan, an idea of a plan, and a timeline that this is going to take, not just this offseason, but the following season as well. It's going to be a 12 to 15 month kind of project to get this team to a point where not just they're fighting for the seventh seed, where maybe that in a bad Eastern Conference like you guys talked about, they can compete to be like a top five team in a conference that's very much in flux right now too.
You know what would have helped me understand a little bit better? Because I'm with you, I just sort of left unfulfilled and a little concerned. But if he had said, the way we're going to approach this is we are going to construct a deep team of 9 or 10 good, young, versatile, two-way players and maintain the flexibility and the ability at any time, should we think there is a chance to land a star, we will have built up our assets, we will have deals that can be moved, that we are going to do this in a way that while we are clearly getting good, like building the floor up, we are never going to give away the chance to make that one galvanizing move.
I think that is what this organization wants to do. I don't think they did a great job of explaining it when their feet were kind of held to the fire. I don't think it was the best explanation of it, but I do think that is kind of the sense around the front office. And again, I also know I've said this publicly. I've said this in radio interviews outside of Chicago, where this is clearly a front office that plays things close to the vest. And I can appreciate that because that's how some of the game has to be played. I also come from the media side of it where I just want clarity. But to give clarity means you're giving away some of the game pieces. Okay, totally fine. I don't think they did a great job of explaining that the first time around. I get a better sense of that now, that that is the plan, that you need to build the floor, raise the floor, build up your assets, build up your developmental core so that the floor of your success gets higher, and essentially appealing enough to go get a superstar.
Right.
And at some point in the next 15 to 18 months, or I guess if you really want to extend it to a trade deadline 2 years from now, 24 months, you are looking to build up your organizational depth in a way that is appealing to the highest level, high money type of star that wants to come back to Chicago. This might be the last chance they get, but I think the plan makes sense. Maybe more sense now than it did a couple of weeks ago, and certainly more sense than it did like 5 months ago.
Yeah, but in that way, if this were the plan, then you don't pass up trading Andre Drummond for 2 second-round picks. You don't pass up that first-rounder that's offered for Caruso. You don't re-sign Lonzo Ball if someone is offering you something. And I've heard all the justifications for it, but it just seems like they've arrived at this position when there are so many other moves that already would have had our timetable moved up a little bit.
I agree. I do agree with that. I think you could have accelerated this process, but also I think people looked at the quality talent of the team that was there, the quality of the players that were there, and say what you will about Zach LaVine's tenure here, he was still a superstar-level player or an all-star caliber player, a guy who scores at a rate that nobody really on this team has the ability to do right now on a consistent basis. You could say a similar thing about DeMar DeRozan. You could say a similar thing about the defensive impact of an Alex Caruso. And the frustrating thing about that is not getting the capital back, or really any capital back, from those three specific players, right? But when you have those three players on a roster, like, you're like, what are the Sacramento Kings thinking right now? That's a very similar looking roster to what the Bulls had a year ago or 2 years ago. You're not looking at Sacramento and thinking, well, shoot, in a competitive West, we should hit the reset button. That's not what teams think. I don't think that's what organizations want to have the mindset of, because that does bleed into the other efforts of your organization, whether that is getting free agents, that is getting high-value pieces, that is trying to get capital back. Do I think they've messed up at times? Yeah, I think they've had a lot of misses in the last 2 years in terms of moves, draft picks, not making moves. Yeah, I think those are misses. If you're willing to hit the reset button at some point, you have to be willing to hit it now just as much as you were willing to hit it a year ago when your talent was better. So, every frustration that is within a fan, buddy, I'm there. Like, I'm the one who's got to sit through this night in and night out. You guys get to turn it off and separate for a while and then come back to it when you guys feel like it or when they've earned your trust back. So I'm the one who's got to watch this and track this. But I also wanted to see them compete. I wanted to see Alex Caruso have a reason to play hard. I wanted to see Andre Drummond have a reason to play hard off the bench. I wanted to see those things. I'm sure that's what the front office, I'm sure that's what Donovan wanted to see. I'm sure that's what fans wanted to see. You don't want to see quality talent and not have them compete and play at a high quality level. The talent base that you see now, again, I feel bad saying this. I'm not trying to insult the talent level or quality or skill set of players, but if you compare them to other teams, this is not a team that has any player on this roster right now that somebody outside is going to say, I need him immediately to make my team a contender. That's what the Bulls are trying to improve upon. And now they've hit the reset button or some form of the button. Again, do you want to say it's a year late, 2 years too late? You can say that. And I'm not going to argue with you and tell you that you're wrong. I do understand why it wasn't hit better now than I did before. And I'm glad that at the very least, there is some form of an idea about how to make this better within the next 12 to 15 months, whatever timeline you want to put on it.
Adam, before we let you go, you're going to be calling the Bulls game tonight against the Knicks, but baseball season is here, baby. We got spring training kicking up. I just want to get your thoughts, because frustrations, talent level, all that stuff applies to both the Cubs and the White Sox. How good and how bad would those two teams be in your eyes as a national voice on the sport?
I still don't see the White Sox getting better than any of the other teams in the division.
Right.
Can you lose 120 games again? I don't think so. I think you just by sheer luck, you might be a little bit better than 120 losses. But I don't expect them to be outside of the fifth spot. I think the Tigers got a little better, even though they're not a great defensive team. Tigers are still solid. Guardians are good. Twins are talented enough. You know, KC put together a great run this year. On the National League side, like, I still think the Brewers are probably the best team in the division. But I think talent-wise, you've seen the level go up for the Cubs. And I feel much more comfortable with where the Cubs are now. I'm going to see the Cubs. We're calling one of their Tokyo games against the Dodgers in March.
Cool. Awesome.
I won't be one for it. Said, let's not get excited. All right. It's one of those things where you're in a box in Los Angeles. But nonetheless, we at least get to see them early. And I'll see a bunch of them in the regular season from Wrigley and all that. I do feel better about where the Cubs are at. I love the Tucker signing. I think Turner is a good piece. It's not Bregman, but it's a piece. It's a veteran piece that understands what October's about and a guy you can plug in multiple spots on your infield and still has a very good demeanor, a very good clubhouse guy that I think will make a good impact. So I have high hopes for what the Cubs can do this year. I know we said that last year too. I expect a better start this year than we saw last year. And I think they should be competing for a playoff spot again.
Adam Amin, welcome back to Bulls Action. We'll be watching and listening here on the Score to the radio call as well, because our guys Chuck and Bill are back in action as well. So thanks for joining us. Have fun.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so very much.
Thanks,
Adam.
Adam Amin.
Oh, my. I wonder which is the cereal for me. Excuse me. Could you tell me where I might find the Burns Ooze?
Sorry, Pops. They don't put nobodies on cereal boxes.
Oh, thank you, Shoppy. I ventured in to search for milk when the door snapped shut behind me.
Yeah, those dairy cases are death traps.
Ketchup? 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 I'm in way over my head.
That's got like a laughing Goldie Hawn go-go vibe to it that you're doing there.
Sock it to me?
Yeah, that's vintage there.
I don't even know what that means. I just know people used to say it in a certain
No, just
time.
whatever move you were doing was like an old late 60s go-go move with the head bob. So yeah, we're grocery shopping.
I have bad dance moves. It's a thing I do.
You know what?
Do the DAC.
It's good that we're grocery shopping and it won't be on an empty stomach, because if you know, don't ever go to the grocery store on an empty stomach.
But that's so much fun.
No, you end up getting way too much
stuff. That's how I come home with all sorts.
I might as well be drunk.
I come home with, I've done that too, but I come home with all sorts of wonderful things.
You live in a house full of other people. When you're by yourself, you come home with too much stuff, you're like, ah.
Yeah, but with the other people,
jar of lemon curd.
They'll say, what is that, Dad? It's an olive salad. What do you mean? It's like, but look, it's only $4. Of course I had to buy it. It's on sale. Oh yeah. Then, or like those tiny little pecan tarts.
We live in different worlds.
They're like little pecan pies and they just need a home. They just need to be
like my meanwhile mom. Like the onion I wanted to buy, I totally forgot about, like, need a recipe.
Oh, you can't whiff on an onion.
My mom, she just, the sweet tooth is real, and she'll but you know, I had to have, last time I went home, I was like, no, get this stuff out of here.
Your mom know about that Trader Joe's?
She knows about everything.
If I get the back and all of a sudden there's like a big old coffee cake there with a raspberry filling in it for $2.50.
It's like, why?
That thing's because it's coming home with me.
No.
Yes.
The carbs are bad. The sugar is bad.
Well, we're shopping for guards. That's what we're shopping for right now. And
I'm guarding myself from.
I noticed that Brad Biggs was asked the question, what is the plan B if Trey Smith stays in Kansas City?
He's not gonna.
Not, but the if is, are the Bears going to be able to get him? Because there's going to be other suitors out there. So the names on his list, Mekhi Becton, Will Freeze, Aaron Brooks, short-term options, Kevin Zeitler, Zach Martin, maybe even Brandon Scherff. All right, well, there's a list. And I have here, as you can tell by the sound, Matt Bowen's free agent guards. Now, what Ray has done is he took all the Matt Bowen top 100, 500?
50.
Top 50.
500.
Top 500. There's like 500 players in the whole league.
Oh, hey, you better. He put up five. I said 100 and he went five.
You better believe Matt Bowen has a list of 500 players he's scouting.
Them. And then he's feeding them an 80 pound pork shoulder later.
And a giant pumpkin.
We're not allowed to talk about the Shane's meat
segment. Of course,
segment.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. We must confront it. We can't hide it. We have to face it. To the skid. So the number two overall on his list, and listed as the best team fit, Smith. for the Chicago Bears. And I think that is pretty obvious to everybody involved.
Given what we found out earlier today about Kansas City, that report that he's not going to be franchise tagged.
Not going to be transition tagged.
Yeah, you know those made up years that they just add to your contract magically.
Hey, man. Mover in the run game, block win rate of 75.1% was sixth among guards, has the foot speed to mirror interior defenders. 6'6", 321 to Bears GM Ryan Poles could make a splash move to rebuild the front for Ben Johnson's new. And after that, indeed, Will Free. And Bowen's best team fit is the Indianapolis Colts. Said it feels like the right move before a right tibia injury ended his week in week five. He had career bests in pass block win rate and run block win rate. Fundamentally sound style, lower body mobility, power, can sustain on contact.
So that helped his numbers.
It did. Can we play? I feel like since it's Studs' birthday and we're going over guys, are we able to bring in some Who's Your Guy drops or no? Breaking the rules?
Wait, why would it be breaking the rules?
I think because I don't think he's put them together yet.
I know we're always cultivating Who's Your Guy drops. It's a consistent theme, but I think the Who's Your Guy drops are sacred and they need to be put specifically in the Who's Your Guy, because other if we do it more than just that 1 week a year, then it's not special.
I agree.
But if Dan's like Trey Smith, and then all of a sudden you hear Rafael Devers go, I play third.
and you will. You will, my good madame.
That's
yes.
The mash I didn't know. It's like mashed potatoes.
When
with,
you look
with
at
gravy.
I want to focus on. Oh yes, yes, Studs. What
no, we got this. The whole idea of this segment is we're grocery shopping, so we have to do we're gonna cultivate more drops like that,
but
as we go
forward.
Yeah, but
if you're shopping like me, you end up with random stuff like jar of lemon curd and like
sometimes
tomatoes.
That happens. Sometimes you luck into something, if you're doing it like I do it, you're not missing the per ounce pricing.
No. Well, the per ounce pricing on Trey Smith, that's the premium stuff. If we're in the meats section, that's the top of the line.
He's the
Yes, he is. He's listed as number two overall in those top 50 free agent guys. While Will Freeze is a drop off to number. Also, I'm trying to figure out if this is a short term fix at one guard position and a stud at another position.
There's going to be
probably
a compromise.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out what are we prioritizing here? Is it Trey Smith?
Yes.
Sure, but you got to make sure that you have enough left over to get the guys you need to fill the other side of the center spot and the center spot itself.
Well, let's visualize.
Because you need two guards.
Let's visualize. When you hear Trey Smith, you think left guard, right? Obviously. And then when you hear that he can help with bull rushes, who's that going to help next to him? Who's got the problem with bull rushes? Braxton Jones.
And Coleman Shelton.
right, but see how that
but
works.
Hopefully, Coleman Shelton's not the guy snapping the ball.
Do you know the picture of like the Lamborghini next to the dilapidated house, and they always joke that that's the Angels. And then when there were two Lamborghinis, and it was Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, and the Angels. You just don't want the Bears' depiction of the O-line to be like that.
Well, let me illustrate what we're talking about here, and about one man's trash is another man's treasure. When you look at the final name on the listed guard, and it's the number 41 free agent overall. So I'm not going to.
So that's top 50.
This is this is the name, and I'm going to redact the name first when I read it. And they say best team fit for this guard would be the Giants. The Giants could fill their right guard vacancy with blank, a 2021 second round pick drafted as a tackle. He's had multiple injuries in his career. However, he has the tools to drive defenders off the ball in the run game and had a pass block win rate of 92% last year. He'd boost a poor offensive line in New York. Fill in the blank, Tevin Jenkins.
Well, the stat about missing 38 out of a possible 68 career games.
Yeah, you left that one out.
I'm sorry, playing in only 38 out of 68. You're still missing 30.
Mm-hmm. I thought that would give it away.
It was already given away.
Yeah, okay. But I thought that
would
be...
But the pass block win rate is why I like him. It's why I still believe in him.
And it's why some team will actually pay a lot of money for him.
That's what I mean. Like, if he were on another team, that's the kind of thing where the Bears would say, well, we're trusting our strength and conditioning people and our athletic training staff that this other team didn't know what they were doing.
Especially
when it came
now
to
they
injuries.
Got new guys.
That's what I mean.
Well, also, listen, we all know that change of scenery benefits certain players. And when you look at his traits compared to his tape, you know, and fortunately a lot of the tape is incomplete. That's the concern here, right? Is that another team is going to get the most out of him, and maybe another strength and conditioning staff will.
The third name on the list at number 20 overall is guard Zach Martin. He said, Martin brings the blend of size at 6'4", 315, and mobility the coaches want at guard. Last year, he played in 10 games due to a right ankle injury. Pass block win rate of 93.7% was 15th, and he hasn't gone to the Chiefs, saying with Trey Smith fitting in with the Bears, this guy could, Zach Martin, could keep the Chiefs' interior strong.
I have a question. I'm going to share my feelings, right? And I want to see if those feelings are confirmed or denied or I'm crazy, whatever. This presumption that Trey Smith, as a free agent, would come to Chicago and there would be, is this riding on the coattails of the Bears securing Ben Johnson's services? Is there a more, it goes from I don't know, maybe, to yeah, they'll go out and they'll get Trey Smith. Are my feelings okay on that?
Well,
Bears cap space might dictate that more so than the, even the head coach.
Well, they have the cap
but
space.
But this is what Biggs says in today's mailbag, answering the question, what is the plan B at guard if Trey Smith stays in Kansas City? Now, we know he's not going to stay in Kansas City.
Well, we should note, he can still sign an extension.
Right, he could.
There.
He could, yes. So what Biggs says is the question probably should be, what is plan B at guard if Smith remains with the Chiefs or signs elsewhere? More than half of the league projects to have in excess of $30 million in available cap space. The Bears can make some moves to create more, and so can a whole bunch of other teams. My point is, there will be competition for Smith if he reaches free agency.
Yep.
And that's kind of, I'm trying to protect myself against this idea that just because someone exists, you go out and get them because you have the money available to go out and get them. Other teams have also money to go out and get guys. And so I don't want us to get into this false sense of entitlement, if you will,
well
in
said.
Free agency.
So that the Bears just deserve to have whoever they want. If we're still at the grocery store, there's that last bottle of whatever, and you're staring down the
And you
the
can
person.
See it off in the distance, right? You're
yeah,
walking
yeah.
towards
and
it.
And you can see somebody heading over to it.
And then you pick up your pace a little bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and sometimes you're diving and you know boxing out or maybe conveniently putting your cart over here and say, oh, I don't know why. How
okay,
that...
I'm not going to those links.
Okay, but you know? My whole point though is when we look at this list, you have to start with what's ideal.
Yes,
and then you go from there. You have to start with the traits that you know your team absolutely needs. He's going to be the highest paid guard in the league. We know that. Like that's established. It's just a matter of who wants to pay him.
Do we think it's $21 million? Is it closer to $25 million? These are the questions that persist
but again,
in my mind.
I think the metaphor is so rich in that regard because you don't have to buy the most expensive cut of meat if you have the time to cook a less expensive cut properly.
Sure,
sometimes
but
sometimes a more flavorful cut, it just takes more investment, a little bit more time. And you end up with the same quality at a much lower initial price.
You don't want the time, Dan. You told me you want them to go do things this year. That's what you're implying when you say that. Don't confuse them with the Cubs.
Don't confuse them with the Cubs. The Cubs absolutely have to buy the best meat and cook it fast and rare.
Okay, but what I'm saying is you're not going to be happy if you look at the offensive line to start next season and it's, let's just work with me here. Let's say they don't get Trey Smith and they get... Drew Dalman, let's say they do get him, right?
I'd like that a lot. We're not doing centers today, but
they still have Braxton Jones, and they still have Darnell Wright, and then they have a couple of rookie guards. Highly thought of rookie guards, but
They're not going to start two rookie guards. There's no way they're going to start two rookie guards.
Also, you know what? I'll give you that. They get like a bridge guy, at one of those guard positions and have a rookie guard.
So here's your bridge guys then.
Okay. Yeah, let's go
now,
them.
Now
one of them is a very well thought of guard.
Well, you've got Mekhi Becton.
Yes.
Right.
Right. Who
Give
is,
me Mekhi.
Who,
exactly.
Who could go back to Philly. 6'7", 363.
Say it again.
Just entering his prime. 6'7", 363.
I don't even know what
happens. Over all of us.
I don't know what happens up there. Like, what occurs at that you elevation?
You met Big Cat Williams.
Yeah, eliteness.
Yeah, you met Big Kitty Cat. That's what it looks like. That's what we're talking about. That's the size we're talking about there.
It's also equal to consistency because you can withstand a season.
Well, that guy was just a tank. Kevin Zeitler, a guard. Physical inside presence, the power to displace defensive tackles, and the movement ability to pull on gap schemes. It also makes one of your opponents a little less powerful at the offensive line if you get him away from Detroit. Number 38 overall, and the one above Tevin Jenkins, is another former Bear in James Daniels.
Yeah, he's coming off that Achilles.
Tore it in week 4, and he is his run block win rate before the injury of 82.7 was second behind only Quentin Nelson.
That's a good stat.
Yeah. And I love James Daniels because when he came out, he was also potentially a center.
I remember
that first practice when I saw him, and I said, who has that giant, magnificent ass? And it was James Daniels.
That's what he said?
It's glorious. Yeah, it's absolutely glorious.
Now so I know that you're a butt man.
For offensive linemen, hell yeah.
The problem with James Daniels' time in Chicago is, unfortunately, he had injuries, and he couldn't control those. Wasn't like one of them a season-ending pack injury or something like that? It was something, I forget what exactly it was off the top of my head. But
he still has injuries.
But the Bears though needed his services. Like that was a smart move to get him at the time, and he would have been a game changer for them when it came to just help.
I'm almost as curious to see if anybody else on this list besides Trey Smith eclipses the $20 million mark.
And a note on James Daniels. So he did have 1 year, 2020, where he only played 5 games. But his other years in Chicago, he started 10 games his rookie year, played in all 16, played every game and started every game in 2019, started and played in every game 2021 and 2022, that first year with the Steelers, only missed 2 games in 2023 with the Steelers, and then last year he had the injury. So yeah, he's been largely pretty healthy.
It was a pec injury. It was a torn pec in 2020. So the point being, like, he was well thought of here, you know?
And he's a veteran.
He was a cap casualty.
I wonder, too, from last year, I know they may bring Matt Pryor back, but do you remember how well that Bill Murray was playing before his pec injury?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if they'll give him a look. I don't know how far he is along in his rehab, but it's for a guy who's appeared to have his arrow pointed up.
Right.
I would not mind if he gets another shot. If he's able to build his strength back up, which is the hardest thing to do after a pec injury, to get that mass back.
Right.
So, but there's your list: Trey Smith, Will Freeze, Zach Martin, Mekhi Becton, Kevin Zeitler, James Daniels, and Tevin Jenkins. And we are going to keep doing these little shopping sprees for different ingredients.
But to be clear, they need to walk out the grocery store with Trey Smith, to be clear.
And the little pecan tarts.
No, yes. We don't need the extra stuff, Dan.
They're very
Eat
cute.
Before you go to the grocery store, please.
I think the pecan tarts came in the form of drafting 2 punters over 3 years.
Oh.
There it is.
Sox Machine. James Fegan, White Sox reporter for SoxMachine.com.
I can anticipate this question is probably way too early.
On Twitter at JR Fegan.
Yes, James.
Asking the questions to get the answers you need.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
If I'd known that, I didn't know that. I'd have checked the rule. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
James Fegan with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We want Machine.
Sox Machine.
James Fegan of Sox Machine joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. He's on Twitter at JR Fegan. The current situation with the White Sox involving the hiring of Brian Bannister, etc., and apparently a new level of assistance is involving them looking everything over and figuring out what they need. I couldn't believe when I read your piece. I couldn't, and I knew they were far behind, and I knew their reputation had been forever, that they're just not in the same business as other teams. Did you know going in what you were going to discover here, or were you equally amazed at how in the past they'd been?
I'd say like I was kind of on the hunt for specifics because you always get like a vibe of, or just the general, like even, and I tried to acknowledge in the story, like at least for the entire time I've been covering the White Sox and probably long before that, it's been a lot of, yeah, we know we're a little old school, but we're catching up, or it's not as bad as people think. So in kind of hearing a lot over the past year, really, since they took over, of like, you know, it's a lot of infrastructure work we need to do. It's a lot of stuff that needs to change over. And it's kind of like, well, what are we talking about? What are we, like, kind of grounded examples, because people have been getting this idea of like, all right, we're modernizing, like, all right, it's a little behind before, but we're catching up. I feel like it really needed specifics to really draw that out. And so, like, I wasn't surprised that there was a lot of stuff they're dealing with, and I also wasn't surprised to hear it from a group that's probably a little bit of motivated to explain why things obviously didn't look any better or maybe worse than ever last season. But as far as, like, knowing where they're housing their data and that it was out of step with the rest of the majors, and that they were the sole exception, not just, like, kind of the, you know, bottom half of the league, but really kind of in this weird category by themselves in terms of not being in compliance in this area. Yeah, that was a little surprising, but I think you also, if I'm in year nine of covering the White Sox and I'm telling you I'm shocked that they're behind, that wouldn't speak well to me, I wouldn't think.
I do want to ask this, though, James. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's always been an assumption, at least, or a discussion that Jerry Reinsdorf was very invested in BAM Tech, Baseball Advanced Media Technology. And that is in sync with how the data is stored for these teams, correct? Like, am I missing something here?
Well, like, they're all kind of involved in the investment of that and resulting in the payoff that they got when it was sold. Sure, as far as the implementation with the team and, you know, having a smooth process where the AA team can reach into all the data they have as an organization and immediately provide like materials to the players. Seems like that part was lagging behind.
This paragraph is, I think, the essence of it. The White Sox obviously knew what all their minor league pitchers threw and in what areas of the strike zone it worked best, but there was no system in place to put that information on wristbands for their catchers to refer to mid-game. Hawkeye tracking systems are being installed at the Sox affiliates for this year, the lack of which is believed to have contributed to the shortcomings in evaluating and valuing defense and responding to how other teams were attacking them. All those ads about the MLB housing statcast on Google Cloud carried a sting because the White Sox were only one of 30 teams that did not have their data housed on it.
The only one.
Which is now, we talked about Jerry Reinsdorf, too, and I thought BAM Tech was one thing, but I have been told that he explicitly is against analytics. That he actually believes, he said, this is a game of human beings. It will always be a game of human beings. He's told people close to him that have told me that he almost has resented all the technology. It is not just due to expense. It is just due to a belief that it doesn't have a place in the game. Is Jerry now being marginalized in his ability to control some of this stuff?
So, one, I mean, I haven't had a lot of direct interface with Jerry. But, you know, something that, you know, was said to me under the old leadership was the belief that, like, we're going to hit a point where, you know, we kind of max out on like how much data is in the game, and it's going to swing back into the old school scouting having this value, and you know, we're going to be at a strength again. Like, that was a belief that senior people from the last regime kind of had, that, you know, we need to keep pace with this as much as we need to, but like the air is it's baseball cyclical, and we're gonna have our day again. It was kind of like a held belief with some of the top evaluators.
How senior are you?
I tell you, the steam engine is returning.
How senior are you talking about here, James?
Enough to have very big impact, I would say. Obviously, I don't think since I heard that's happened. I think if anything, we've just explored how much we didn't already know or didn't have the ability to measure and implement, and it's only gotten more intense and only accelerated in how much it's accelerating type of thing. We've not hit that cap as far as like data having influence. But to get back to your main point, I think what was described to me recently is like, you would think after 110, 115 losses, that would have been enough to really sway it. But they really feel like the record and hitting it got them to a point where it was a lot easier to say, like, hey, it'd be cheaper to buy all this stuff than all the players that we need. Like, this team's so far away. You saw us break a record. This is why this is necessary. And that they felt like, the current, front office baseball operations felt like setting that record, not like they were rooting for losses or wanted to go through that, but when they're having conversations about what they need to buy, what they need to do this offseason, a big point for them that really helped in terms of like selling what they wanted to do to ownership of like, hey, this is what we've been saying, what we need. And it's the upfront cost. While it's going to be something, it's certainly not as much as it's going to be to buy players on the open market, which we know that you don't feel like we have the wherewithal to do right now. This is the cheaper route for getting rid of what you can see is clearly not an acceptable on-field product.
But you know what I found hilarious, though, is when you quote Ryan Fuller, the director of hitting, saying, I pride myself on having a JUCO mindset. We might not have the fanciest equipment, but we're going to beat the crap out of teams that have every resource possible. So I laughed out loud when I saw it. I'm like, no, you're not.
I didn't laugh. I shed a tear.
But that's not a major league team should never be in that position. And the idea, even if you want to go back to the ancient references to Billy Beane, and if you're going to be the team that has less, you have to be not dumber, but smarter.
Might have lost him.
Yep.
Let me answer that question.
I think we did.
Let me ask
the Cylons have claimed.
Would you like me to answer that question for you? Probably not.
See, but you didn't laugh when you saw that?
The laws didn't want him to answer.
I stopped laughing a long time ago.
Oh, it's still hilarious.
When they talked about the plane and everything else, who wrote that article?
I mean, I get it. I get why he said that, right? Like, you're trying to do the most with what you've got, and you've got to have some sort of mindset that gets people to follow you and believe in you. Like, I understand that.
Right, but it's okay to have that mindset, but the next thing has to be, because we don't have the resources, we are going to do things. We're going to find market inefficiencies. We're going to develop players in ways that no one else sees. And they're doing the opposite.
Well, yeah, because their owner doesn't want to.
I mean, he says the next quote is, but the great thing is they've made a great commitment to research and development.
To begin, but you're 30 years behind, which is, you got so far to go. By the time you actually get back to 2006, they will have moved on to whatever the next thing
is. No, you know what this is? It further illustrates what Chris Getz was trying to say in interviews, but he just wasn't saying all of it. And so because he wasn't saying all of it, it didn't make sense when he said it. So now it makes it make sense. Like, every time I hear more about this,
so wait,
his comments make more sense, Getz's. Like, when he was hired, things he said during his first season as general manager, there were times where he would say things, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, this is on you. He was saying stuff. He just wasn't saying everything.
Also, if you remember why he was hired, I mean, it was explained. He's already familiar with the organization. He can figure out the audit quicker than somebody from the outside. But I'm like, but isn't he part of the problem?
I mean, James, you're back, right? We could be way off here, but every time you come out with information like this, I feel like it further clarifies things that Getz said. He just didn't say everything to begin with.
I think, like, I mean, he said it when we were talking the other day that, he felt like it took a year for him to really, and he, I think probably one of the strengths of this new leadership is, like, it's not based on the idea that, like, he knows everything and is a genius, but, like, he felt like to bring in outside people to kind of assess what they needed to do or what was wrong or what is out of step. He felt like that process really played out over the course of this year. So I think, yeah, like there's some element of it went from this is going to be a quick turnaround to, well, it's going to go as quick as it can, but there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen. I think some of that evolution is based on, you know, what was kind of discovered in like kind of assessing the organization over the past year. But I think some of it is like, yeah, you got to say you're trying to do as fast as you can, but getting more into the job really revealed how long it's going to take.
But the inconsistency there is so glaring when the only reason Chris Getz got hired was from what they said, because he can hit the ground running, because he's going to save them a year of rather than having somebody acclimate with the organization. And what they didn't say was they didn't want somebody coming in telling them how far behind they were and how many millions and millions of dollars they would have to spend actually get up to speed. So if that's the case, you then can't say, hey, look at all these new people we brought in Bannister and the other.
In catch-up mode.
Right, and then when you didn't even want to interview other possible general managers who would have come in from jump and said, whoa, we're not even close to being able to do this right.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously having a process would have been healthier for that. Coming off of the Venable process, they're talking up about how helpful that was and also how much like they tried to strip away bias from it and really search and not have like just, you know, the two main decision makers just putting together a list of guys they like and know and tried to expand it. So yeah, a similar process for GM would have been helpful, I feel.
Oh,
they didn't do it.
They're still going off of that 2017 top 100 prospect list, at least as far as last year.
Oh man,
you know they are.
James, thanks for the hard work, much appreciated, man. Thanks for the time too.
Thanks for having me on.